this idea that public and the private are at odds with each other and you know, can't work towards a common goal is misfounded.
There's no point in having a conversation if you're not going to listen.
One normally thinks about local residents when one thinks about community, but it's very much engagement with local businesses as well.
Welcome to the EG podcast unit. I should say to listeners first, though, that I have to apologise for a very undiverse podcast that you're about to hear, because it is a podcast full of four, I'm counting myself in that, wonderful women. So joining me today in the podcast studio is Penny Humphrey from UNI, Savannah DeSavry from Built ID, and Susan Froom from Mishcon Dorea. And we are here today to talk about community engagement. And it's two words that we hear a lot, but do we really know what they mean? And do we really know as a industry how to do it? And that's what we'll be talking about today. So I'm just going to open up the conversation with each of our ladies here, just telling us what they think community engagement means. So I'm going to start with you, Susan.
Thank you very much, Sam. I have to say I've heard an awful lot about community engagement over the last week or so, having been at both the Labour and Conservative Party conferences, and we have sat round the table really agonising quite a lot about what's involved. And clearly it involves engaging with communities, which is something that the real estate sector has not been brilliant at. But also one of the interesting things I think came out was one normally thinks about local residents when one thinks about, you know, community, actually sitting down with people and talking about, you know, the plans for their area. But interesting point that came out of one of our dinners was that it's very much engagement with local businesses as well. And, you know, that's vitally important, because if you don't actually engage with the businesses, you don't, you know, get them involved. If they close, jobs go, people move out of the area. So the whole thing is very circular.
Penny, you and I are one of those developers who is known for doing pretty well at engaging with communities, particularly with the local people as well. What does it mean to you and I, and to Susan's point there about also engaging with the local businesses? How does you and I feel about that?
It's fundamental, really, to what we do. I think the key thing when we are talking about communication is actually we need to listen more. People who live in their local area, they know it way better than we do. And I think it is all about a conversation. And listening is, our job is 90% of that conversation. I think when we talk about communities, there are many, many different communities. Everyone has a slightly different definition. But I think what we try and do is be as wide and as inclusive as possible, and really try to get to talk to people who normally wouldn't partake in a public consultation, for example.
Thank you. And Savannah, you were obviously coming at this from not being a developer, not being a builder of spaces, but you have built a community, certainly through Built ID, and that's enabled you to look at that engagement in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would agree that community engagement is all about genuine dialogue. It's about consultation, and not just of, you know, the community leaders. Community engagement should be speaking to as wide a demographic as you can, not just the people that understand the planning process and are already, you know, have the time and inclination to engage on your terms. I think that's a really important part of it. And I would go as far as to say it's the local business community, it's the local sort of residents, but equally community could be the community inside of your building. I mean, we're starting to see much more of a focus on the idea of curating a community inside of your office building or your PRS scheme. And I think that's an interesting perspective to look at it through as well, is that community can be curated anywhere and they're there to engage with if you take the time.
Do you think there's a possibility that that word community is, do business people look at it as a bit too of a fluffy word, and that, you know, if we think, oh, building a community around a space or around a building is something for, oh, you know, those people to do, not for us to do as leaders of business. That will just happen. Our job is bottom line and creating.
So I think in tech, the idea of community and your culture as a company is incredibly important. You know, it's tough to attract the top talent, and it is something that matters, and it's something that affects your bottom line. I think in terms of community engagement, when it comes to planning is only becoming more political. It's only becoming more important to engage the community, and both in the public sector and private sector are taking it pretty seriously and getting more so. So I do think that perception is starting to change.
And how can we use, the world has changed a lot, hasn't it, over the last 10, 15 years. And I guess that community issue has become bigger around that point. We've seen people using social media, using tech to hinder projects, I suppose, that one would hope were going to increase that community engagement, the community feel, perhaps. And that hasn't quite worked. So how do we utilise those tools out there for the greater good?
So at Built ID, we are actually creating a suite of tools for developers to engage with the community in a gamified way that makes, you know, sort of busy professionals, parents, minorities feel like they have an equal voice and feel invested in the process. Give them a sense of ownership over the project so that they, you know, those that are supportive of a generation can come to the fore, and you don't only hear those loudest negative voices that currently shout. And that's exactly what we're focusing on, because social media can be disruptive for that. And so we're trying to balance it.
It's an interesting point. At one of our conference dinners, I think it was Nick Karp from Pocket Living, raised the point, you know, it's fine to engage with, it tends to be that the older people who've lived in an area for a while, but how do we engage with the next generation? I mean, the younger people who probably are going to be most affected, bearing in mind that the, you know, time span to get a development out of the ground is relatively long. So we were actually looking specifically at how you actually engage with the younger people.
And how did you and I engage with younger people? You have quite a young feel to the company, to the branding. Does that all help?
I think it does, and I think we pay particular attention because I agree, you know, sometimes there is only a certain demographic of voice that is very powerful and is heard. But actually, the young people, they are the ones that are going to benefit from whatever regeneration and development is happening. And actually, it should be for them. So they should have a say in that. I think we look at it in a few different ways. I think social is interesting, and I think we use that within a suite of communication tools. And we work very much with our worthwhile use partners and tenants by creating activities and events to actually bring younger people who may not normally even know what a public consultation is, or may not want to get involved, or there is that kind of barrier on, I don't really know what I'm supposed to be doing, I don't know if I can affect anything. So we really try and break down those barriers and all those kind of blockers to entry by actually putting on engaging activities to create a pool to generate and start that conversation.
I guess that's the thing, isn't it? We are, as a generation, as a nation, maybe as a world now, getting incredibly lazy. And to the thought of going to a public consultation to perhaps see some pictures on some boards around a room that you can't really engage with is... I know I wouldn't be bothered to go, but if you can gamify something or create something that's really engaging, perhaps that is a way to allow people to have their say. Tell us exactly, Savannah, nodding is not good on a podcast, by the way. Savannah, exactly how that sort of gamification for you is working, and how, what does the app look like? What can I do if I want to get involved with a project?
Sure. So the first and crucial part is actually the education piece. It's making it engaging and animated for someone to understand the framework, the timeline, what's going on with the project, the key facts around it, and then actually giving them a way to have their own say. So essentially through highly visual polls, it could be you put questions towards them like, what colour do you want the brick to be on this wall? Or we're going to have public realm space. Would you prefer it's a playground, or would you prefer that it's seating area for you? And letting, you know, decisions that cost-wise and aesthetically, you are happy to hand over that control so the community actually can make a difference and can feel and see in the result that they had a real say, and can voice their concerns in a way that isn't, you know, sort of able to hijack the dialogue and necessarily let those few voices shout the most. And this is gamified, so the more you engage, regardless of how you vote, the more points you get. Mm. And when you get to, say, 30 points, those points can be translated into money, which the developer has put aside for one of three local charities. And you get to choose which of the local charities that money goes to. So it sort of creates a game out of it. And if you, I don't know, get 100 points, you become a community leader and you're invited on a site tour. You're invited to one of those engaging activities in person, like you and I runs, which you would want to go to. And you start to, yeah, create this new sense of community that isn't dictated by I have time on 6 p.m. on Wednesday to go sit in a meeting and hear people shout.
What I think is really exciting is that Savannah mentioned she started thinking about finding a tech solution to the problems that developers have in engaging with communities when she came to one of our collaborators' roundtables, which I think was a year ago. And the developers there were talking about the problems they have in engaging with with communities, and Savannah thought, well, you know, we must be able to come up with a tech solution. So I think it's brilliant that so short a time afterwards she's come up with something.
Yeah, that's absolutely how it started, and it was seeing what a pain point it is, and that many developers, and actually Matthew Wine was one of them from UNI at the time, who clearly wanted to have more positive community engagement and just didn't have the tools at their disposal to engage those demographics who don't currently participate. And I then went on to realise that, you know, speaking to a lot of local councils, they equally shared that desire for developers to be able to have this more positive relationship and that they will take it seriously. And what's kind of exciting is we actually have local councils who want to use it on their own schemes as well and want to encourage developers to use it. So this idea that, you know, the public and the private are at odds with each other and you know, can't work towards a common goal is, I think, you know, sort of misfounded.
Old fashioned, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly.
And Penny, for you at you and you and I and an app, it's difficult to say that, isn't it? An app like Savannah's, where you can see down to the smallest detail exactly what people want and need, I suppose, being the most important word, are you able to react to all of those wants and needs, and do you find that it helps you in maybe not even just in that particular scheme, but in your thinking beyond those schemes, looking to the future at how you'll develop, where you'll develop perhaps?
I think good consultation has to be a conversation, and there's no point in having a conversation if you're not going to listen and therefore you're not going to act on the information that you've asked for people. So I think it's incumbent on all of us in this industry, if we're asking people for their opinions, that they are actually looked at and they are actioned where possible. You know, we're not going to please all of the people all of the time. But as I said at the top, I think the people who have lived in their place where, you know, we're an interloper, they know that place way better than we do. So actually, most of them have really brilliant ideas about how we can pedestrianise somewhere, or actually what they want, whether they want a coffee shop or whether they want a chain store or whether they want an independent retailer. So actually, they have really, really key information, which if we listen to it, we then make a much, much better scheme.
So how do you deal with the local people who know their area really well and love it the way it is and don't want it changed? How do you cope with that situation?
I think, again, that is part of a conversation. As I said, you're not going to please all of the people all the time. And, you know, we are forcing change on people, and, you know, pretty much all of us don't like forced change. So I think it's a process, and I think that's where we really invest in our worthwhile use programs, because we can start having a conversation much, much earlier with people. At Albert Embankment, for example, we are still consulting with people over the scheme and what they would like to see in the final Fire Brigade Museum. And that's been going on for over 2 years. Mm. So I think we need to think about consultation as not a wet Wednesday down some community centre, but actually it's a long and it's an ongoing process. And some of the times you win some people over or they become neutral, and other times you just won't. But I think our responsibility is to listen, to have the conversation, and to make sure people have the information required, because, you know, everyone is entitled to make up their own mind.
Yeah. There's a... I wrote a piece not so long ago that called out some in the industry over a certain level of arrogance that there may be, that maybe is needed sometimes in business, but there's also a lot of humility that is needed, and perhaps that's where we need to go with community engagement. That, you know, as you said, Penny, you're interlopers, you don't know that community as well as the people who have lived there, so we have to be humble enough to listen and hear what they have to say and react to that. And perhaps that's where we can make those inroads with that older generation, perhaps, that Susan, you mentioned, that are sometimes the ones that are the NIMBYs out there, and get them to understand that we are trying at least to understand their point of view.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think at the very least that you need to take people on that journey with you. I think that's a big part of it, is change is inevitable. And as you said, a lot of people don't like it. But if you can take them on that journey with you, even if they're somewhat reluctant, it's better than just arbitrarily them feeling like something's being imposed on their local landscape. And a big thing of what we're trying to do, which actually came from the councils, is this idea of conveying to the community the different compromises you have to make as a developer. You know, is it more important of this outdoor space that you have parking or that you have landscaping? Because we can't do both. Mm. Or if you only want it to be 4 stories and not 7, we're not going to be able to have as much affordable housing. Making sure that you can communicate the sort of compromises you're having to make, I think that education piece is so important for people at least to understand more of the process. Even if, you know, and that level of lack of arrogance to convey that journey, I think is important.
And there's another element, again, that's come up a lot around the debating tables at the conference, is the way that politics are changing on the ground. So as well as having to bring communities with them, developers increasingly are having to bring the local authority with them. And as some of the London authorities have moved to the left, you know, there are people who really don't like developers. So one's, you know, it's another, I suppose, area of engagement where you've got to explain that what you're trying to do is a good thing for the community. Two people who sort of come to the discussion with sort of quite a negative viewpoint of what developers do. So I think that's also making it more difficult.
There is definitely a misunderstanding of what development means, isn't there? What regeneration means. We hear a lot about gentrification, and that's a bad word apparently, but, you know, surely a better place to live is what everyone's after. I wonder, and Penny, you've used this word a few times now, and I like it a lot, worthwhile space. And so we've used meanwhile space quite a lot, but worthwhile space, I think, is a great word, so well done for that. But is there something that we need to do around language to help with that misconception of what developers are, who developers are?
Yes, that's certainly something we debated with Damien as chair over the last couple of weeks, and we were talking a lot about the word regeneration. One of the councillors around the table said, well, actually, we don't use the word regeneration. We use the word estate improvement because it's less contentious. It seems that regeneration is a dirty word, and immediately takes people to gentrification, which is obviously not a word one wants to use. So I think clearly we need to, I mean, the language is important, just to make sure people understand that what the developers are trying to achieve is something really good for the local area.
Was there a conscious decision of you and I to come up with worthwhile use as a phrase?
Yes, very definitely. So our purpose as a company is to create positive change and positive socio-economic change. And I think the key word there, especially with our worthwhile use, is the social value. So with what we term worthwhile use, other people say meanwhile use. So once we get on a site, if there are derelict buildings, quite often we do brownfield sites, a hoarded up, closed up building provides no social value at all. So the first thing we always try and do is take those hoardings down, take those blockers away, and invite the local community in. And we fill that space with charities, with social enterprises, with entrepreneurs, startup businesses, artists. And we provide a risk-free environment. And our ask of all of our partners within that space is that they create really meaningful programs for the community. So what becomes from a derelict, boarded up, broken down building is actually a new community space which is full of light and laughter. And we think that's very worthwhile doing.
Sav, for you with the app as well, is the kind of language that you're using in there important too, and uses like those that Penny's talked to us about? Is that something that the community can get engaged
yeah,
with?
Yeah, absolutely. And something else we do is that it's been designed to go left to right or right to left. So you don't have to speak English as your first language to be able to engage with the developer and with their track record and see what's going on and be part of that conversation. And I think that's important. And I do actually think as we go on and as developers are becoming more conscious of the importance of community engagement, you will start to see the wheat separating from the chaff, if not already. You know, developers like you and I or First Space who take community engagement seriously and are using, you know, the latest tools in order to do so, communities will start to respect and respond to that and want them in their area. I mean, what you've just described, who wouldn't want that? That's someone who clearly cares about the community.
Excellent. And sort of sticking with the language and Sav, you mentioning there about creating an app that people can use if English isn't their first language, and that's super, super important because a lot of these places being regenerated may well have a lot of people who don't have English as their first language. We also, with planning, have a lot of really complex terms that the general Joe on the street might not understand. They might not understand what a Section 106 is, for example, and just think, and I guess we saw it with Haringey, that developers are going to come in and be paid money by the local authority and take away their homes. How important, Susan, do you think it is from a sort of planning and from a legal perspective that we think about different ways for those sort of terms to get across those terms and what they actually mean and do?
You raise an interesting point because planners tend to use sort of strange abbreviations and initials for, you know, if you ask a planner to write an article, you will end up with terms you have to go and Google. So I guess that reflects the planning legislation and regulations. But, you know, it is a very complex area. So, you know, the idea that one might be able to reduce it, to terms that everybody understands, I think that's probably a little bit optimistic. But, you know, again, I think, you know, probably the time is right to revisit some of the like use classes order around the high street, for instance. No, I think planning is always going to be a bit of a mystery if you're not a planner.
Yeah, I think there are things you can do to make it easier for people to understand. Also drawings, you know, if you go on a planning portal, as a layman, it's impossible to understand what's going on. So whilst we're focusing on trying to make it so you can easily understand things like Section 106 on our app, you also have platforms like View City who are making it easier to visualise what's being built. And I think these sort of initiatives are really important, and Future Cities Catapult is doing a lot of interesting work around it as well to try and basically, you know, open up this rather complex, opaque world to the people that do care. Increasingly, you know, you have a new demographic who are becoming politicised, especially after Grenfell. They're very conscious of what's being built and how it's being built. And I think we have a real opportunity as a property industry to not try and like dumb it down for them, but actually just to communicate in a way that I think a lot of property developers, you go on the portal and you're like, oh God, never mind someone who's not involved in the industry at all. I think there's a real opportunity here.
Yeah, yeah, I think, sorry, just on the language, I think jargon is another barrier. You know, jargon is, oh yeah, we're all in a club and so we know what this term means, but nobody else does. So it totally goes against the grain, really, of us trying to be inclusive and get people's, you know, thoughts and opinions.
Yeah, and just going back to the point about 3D realisation, at Mishcon de Rare, we're working with some young space scientists who run a company called Orbital Witness, and they take satellite imagery. So it makes it really easy to actually look at, you know, images of the building. You can regress those over months and years if you want to see, you know, exactly, you know, when it was built, when it was extended. And, you know, that ties into the sort of View City, you know, type of 3D realisation.
And what a cool way to engage with the community.
That's super cool.
Like if someone said, oh, we've got some space scientists, I would be like, oh, I'll have a look at that. And it's a great way to get the younger guys involved.
I think absolutely. I need to hire a space scientist. Yeah. Just to say I have one.
No, I recommend it. And it actually makes you think about the fact that these you know, these cameras are going round overhead the whole time taking
Everyone's
pictures
watching,
of you.
Yeah. I think it's great, and I'm going to end on a positive, and I'm really glad that you said this word twice, Savannah, the word, the opportunity, that we have as an industry an opportunity now to really open up, communicate, properly communicate and engage with communities. And, you know, we have immense amounts of skills in this country and immense amount of passion that can create amazing buildings, amazing spaces and amazing communities. And I think we should seize that opportunity. So hopefully everyone has enjoyed listening in. If you have anything to talk to us about on this subject, you can, on this story, you will see a button that says start recording. You can press that button and send us a little message. Tell us what you think about community engagement and we will put them all together and we will try and answer some of your questions if you've got them. But in the meantime, let me thank my guests, Susan Freeman, Savannah De Savery and Penny Humphrey.